Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Allison in Wonderland Mental Health Podcast. I have a really amazing guest, an author, someone who has been doing this for 35 years and has so many wonderful things to share with us. But first, I did want to make sure that you know, I am not a doctor. I am a mental health advocate. We will talk about mental health issues, but you should not make changes to your healthcare without talking to your healthcare provider. If you're in a state of crisis, please call 911 or go to the nearest emergency room. The Suicide Lifeline recently changed its number to 988, which is a three-digit number that you can call or text at any time, anywhere in the United States, and they will find you help and resources in your area. So once again, that number is 988 for people that are in crisis. So today we have Phyllis, who is going to, I imagine we will go through a lot of rabbit holes because we both have so much information to talk to. But I'm going to let Phyllis introduce herself first. Phyllis, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. Do you want to just kind of tell us who you are in your own words and kind of what led you on this journey that you're on now?
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really an honor and a privilege to share with you. I am a psychotherapist. I have a master's in counseling and psychology, and I've been in private practice for over 30 years. And I've done a lot of work with individuals, families, couples, children, adolescents, and I had a lot of training in working with abuse and neglect, and I worked in a sexual abuse treatment program for a couple of years before I went into private practice full time, and that gave me a really good foundation for the dynamics of abuse, because what I saw in my practice is that abuse and neglect are actually very widespread in our culture, even in the histories of people who appear to be functioning fairly well in life. Once they come to therapy, you find stories that are sometimes very horrifying of what people have survived. So that's the practice that I've had, and I have also written two books. One's called A Light in the Darkness, and the other one is Into the Fire, and those books are on Amazon. And I'm currently writing a different kind of book, and the title of the book is going to be America in Therapy. And this book is all about taking what I have learned as a psychotherapist and looking especially at the influence of families on the development of individuals, and applying what I've learned to our nation, to looking at the family of America through the lens of how we understand individual families. And in particular, seeing that, and what really prompted me writing this book is really seeing that many of the dynamics that are happening in our country, from the top down, politically, institutionally, governmentally, are very much the same as the dynamics found in abusive families, with the same devastating effects on millions of people that abusers have on their family members. And I just felt like it's my passion, and it feels like my duty to sort of call it out, so that we understand, for two reasons. One, so that we can understand what's happening to all of us. And two, because I really believe that the principles of good psychotherapy hold some of the answers that our country needs to embody and develop and proliferate in the way government and big institutions are run. And those principles of healing relation rather than fueling divisiveness are not part of our national agenda. And I feel very strongly that if we're going to make it, honestly feel like if we're going to make it, we need to shift gears and really heal our human relations in this country from the top down and the bottom up. And one last thing I just want to say about that is, in the last, I've been in practice, as I said, for a really long time, and it's only since the last two elections, in all my years of being a therapist, have people come to therapy traumatized by what's going on in our country and having to process that in their sessions rather than, just what's going on in their individual lives. And I've never seen that before. People couldn't sleep at night, just terrified of where this country is going and the impact it's having on their daily level of anxiety.
I think that that's really a very interesting point. And I can kind of even touch on where I was sitting on the therapy couch through the last couple of elections. But I think that what's really interesting here is, like, I have 2 degrees in psychology related fields. And in all of that time, I took 1 sociology class. But it seems like really we need to pay more attention to this psychology of the whole in sociology. And really the whole journey I've had through this podcast, that's really what I've gotten as the main bottom line, is that so many people are affected by this from the infrastructure, just from, like, the way we're set up from the very beginning with all of our systems and processes, that there is a sociological issue here outside of just one-to-one, you know, counseling. And I think that it's really interesting. It's like, hey, I took so many psychology classes, 1 psychology class. And I think that that's really interesting. And then when you talk about, you know, the election anxiety, I don't remember ever having a time where people had such election anxiety. And I remember 2 elections ago when I, you know, was sitting in my regular therapy session, my therapist asking, you know, saying a lot of people have come to me very upset about the results and things like that and the anxiety. And I was just like, you know, it is what it is. Like, I can't change it today. I had a lot of anxiety leading up to it. And then I did have people in my life call just crying, you know, the world's ending. And I'm like, you know, that maybe, you know, that's not exactly where we're, you know, the world's not ending. But there has been a lot of anxiety surrounding those things that I don't remember ever really witnessing before. And I think that, you know, you kind of talk about, you know, what we want and then what we actually vote for. And what I always tell people is that, like, I vote for the person, not the party. So, like, there's this Jerry Garcia quote that I always quote at election time. And it's something, maybe paraphrasing, that if you're constantly choosing the lesser of 2 evils, you're still choosing evil. And there's the anxiety. What's our choice? And everyone's like, well, I choose the lesser of 2 evils. And I'm just like, it sounds so weird that I'm sitting here, and of all of the, you know, mental health resources that I could tap into, I'm like, and there's this Jerry Garcia quote that really is the one. And I think that that's my anxiety, is I'm like, I want to vote for the person. Where's that person? Why am I not given that person that I want to vote for? So then you're kind of pushed into that position, and it is that disconnect of what we want versus what we actually go out and actively try to get when we're doing those things.
Yeah. And that's actually something that I talk about a lot in my book. And that's something that I think is alarming, but also something that if we understood, we could better do something about. So again, sort of looking at the macrocosm of our country and through the lens of the microcosm of the individual and the individual family, one of the things that I was sharing is that, you know, in all the years that I've been a therapist, what people come to therapy for is trying to get out of the wars that they're in their lives, trying to get out of the pain and the lack of relationality or the frustrated creative drives or the lack of belonging. People are coming to heal the pain of that. I've never had a client that's come and wanted more violence in their life or more disconnection, because that's just not human nature. We want to belong. We want to feel more love. We want to feel safe. We want to be provided for. And the disconnect between what the individual wants and what the agenda of our largest institutions and our government often are completely discordant. And so through the lens of psychology, what I'm examining in my book is, how did we get to that disconnect? How are we as a country condoning and supporting violence and divisiveness and discrimination and targeting and silencing of truth tellers in ways that none of us want in our own lives? So how did that disconnect happen? And one of the things that it makes, so what I'm saying is that psychology helps make some of that understandable. There are reasons why we do that. And some of it has to do with our early conditioning, our own early conditioning. And many people, and I think you and I were talking about this a little bit, can see that they've gotten to a place in their lives where they don't even know why they're doing what they're doing. They don't know why they're in a bad relationship and why they can't get out of it, or why they're not going for their dreams and feel stuck or blocked or insecure or self-doubting. And so many people that we find coming to therapy and ourselves, you know, because we're all part of the people, are living lives that they didn't want. And they don't know why they got to where they are. And they're sort of like, and I definitely experienced that myself before I did some therapy myself quite a long time ago, was like, I'm not the person I thought I was. I'm not manifesting the person that I thought I was. And I don't know how to manifest her. I don't know how to get the love that I haven't gotten, or give the love I haven't been able to give, or manifest my full creativity. So many different things. And the truth is that through the lens of psychology, we're not really a mystery. Our early conditioning sets us up for the coping mechanisms and the beliefs we have about ourselves that form the path we take in life for the most part. You know, some people have divine intervention and they make a miraculous breakthrough, but that's not really the case for most people. Most of us are struggling to live our most authentic selves in safety and valuing and peace and harmony with others. So that's a lot of what I'm looking at. And so when we look at the country, it's like, let's look through the lens of psychology to figure out how we got to this place. Because one of the things I really wanted to share with you is, in doing some of the research for my book, one of the things that I found was that there had been a study done on volunteerism in America. And what that study found was that volunteerism was really high. People are volunteering to help one another all over the country in many, many ways, going into prisons and working with prisoners, you know, feeding the homeless, teaching inner city people how to grow gardens on their rooftops. There are so many people with good hearts and, you know, good sharing, loving impulses for their fellow human being that, you know, you want to see that on the news. You want to see that be part of our politics. And again, I'm looking at how that disconnect happened, that there's so much goodness, there's so much creativity, there's so much strength that we could even access way more if we weren't so invested in defense and fighting.
Yeah, and it definitely is an interesting point, because I've said this in other episodes, and I know people probably think it's insane, but I don't watch the news and I don't read the news. If something big happens, my husband will be like, hey, go check this out. And I'll go look into it. But I had to quit the news after 9/11. Because I obsessively watched it. And I was in Alabama. I wasn't personally connected to anyone, but we had this nationwide trauma that happened. And it probably trickled even to other nations where they're like, if America gets hit this hard, what does that mean for us? You know? And so I finally had to just turn it off. And if there's something big, my husband and I don't really align politically, but he'll tell me about the thing and I'll go research it on my own and see what's going on, because I do need to know. Or I'll be like, hey, why are the flags at half mast? Because I cannot constantly have that negativity. And so even like when I'm on social media, Instagram really has me pegged, where the only thing is that you see in my feed are like happy mental health tips, self-care, and then cat videos. So that's like very much those are the things that I wind down looking at the end of the day, or like, you know, remember you're good enough and that you're special and you're loved and these things. And then look at this cute cat, because I can't handle personally the stress of the whole nation on me. And I think that's, you know, it's really important, because we do have those positive things that we don't get to focus on as much, and we're not celebrating the wins out there. And it is very stressful, really, I think, as a nation, you know, with those experiences, and why aren't we seeing this volunteerism? If we don't know people are volunteering in the prisons, then how do we know what kind of experiences there are in the prisons? How, you know, people, recidivism, like why are people having, right, you know, constantly ending up back in prison? Well, we're so disconnected from that. And I'm not, right, saying, hey, go volunteer in a prison, because my husband would never let me go. He'd be, you know, volunteering in prison. You're like, no, you're not doing that. But at the same time, like knowing the people and hearing the stories of the people that do that would help us to have that personal connection and understand and have the empathy that we need, even though we're disconnected from it.
Absolutely. And two things that makes me think of. One is that, you know, again, using the family as the sort of the role model for the country, you know, if a family was just feeding their children bad food and only showing them horror movies and violence, we'd say, what's wrong with you?
I know those people.
Right. Right. Yeah. But it's not good. It's bad. It's not good food for our children and ourselves to consume. And that's kind of what we're being fed by the media. I think there's a place for needing to know what's going on. However, what I think is health producing and positive is, even if you have to talk about something going on that's not pleasant or violent or scary, that the frame around it is, what can we do about this? Not just sensationalizing it or looking for who to blame or who to retaliate against. So there can still be a frame of healing, even around things that are very scary and unpleasant. Makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's definitely one of these situations where you kind of see, you talk about like an abusive relationship and how did I get here? Well, you also, when you're in those situations, I think people have a hard time really understanding not only how did I get here, but how do I get out of it? And I Absolutely. Think when you're at this point, you're like, okay, well, I've spent 30, 40, 50 years being this person. How do I, now that I know that I'm not really this person, how do I make that change? And I think that right. we get into that position where if you're in an abusive relationship and it's like, well, no one else will love me if I leave, or, you know, everyone in my family is going to hate me if I do this. And so you feel trapped in this version of you that is not you. And right. it's very scary to get out of the abusive relationship and to make that change. And I think that's yeah. where a lot of people are, where you're like, okay, I recently ditched my executive marketing career because it was just absolutely not what I thought I was working towards over the last 20 years, and started focusing on mental health. And I still question the salary that I dropped and the career right. trajectory that I dropped. But right. I hit my empty nest phase. My youngest graduated like in May, and for the very first time in my entire life, I had to figure out who Allison is. Not right. Allison as the mom and Allison as the wife and Allison as the daughter and the sister. Who am I? And so I'm at 40 years old and just now figuring out who I yeah. am and yeah. how to adapt my life to be able to be my authentic self. And I think that it's a very terrifying thing. It's really scary.
Yeah. yeah. And what I would say, part of the answer to that is that I also think that really good therapy holds. And part of the reason why I would love mental health in general to be part of a national agenda that receives enormous funding rather than our defense budget, for instance, is because it really is examining your early conditioning and reprocessing the things you took on about yourself, or we did, that weren't positive, that put sort of layers of shutdown or fear or repression or sadness or depression or anxiety on us. And it's really peeling back those layers. And psychotherapy, good psychotherapy, makes it safe to do that, so that we can actually look at what hurt us without being re-traumatized. And we can also look fearlessly at the ways we might have been hurtful, without being re-traumatized or hating ourselves. But that maybe we learn to take a different kind of responsibility for that or make amends somewhere, or really seek reconnection and a different kind of communication with other people. And to me, that applies to our country. And so this denial around our past is actually antithetical to everything we know in good psychotherapy about what heals. We cannot heal unless we can own the full extent of our past. And that's both the pain that we have inflicted, pain that we have endured, and our gifts that are waiting to be accessed. And that applies to a country as well as it applies to an individual. And if it's okay, I just wanted to segue to one other piece that I think is really important. When we were talking about people volunteering, and for instance, like, you know, I had read a lot about people volunteering in prisons. And one documentary I saw was a group of, I think they were Buddhists, and they went in and they did a meditation program in a, I think it was people who were in prison for life. And it was profound, the effect they had. So two things, some of the statistics, and I can't quote you the numbers, but some of the statistics are now showing that a great majority of people in prison are abuse victims. You know, so there's a cycle of abuse that it's our responsibility and our calling to interrupt, not to blame and punish. And one of the things that really good psychotherapy shows us, this isn't a theory, this is something we discover by working with people, is that inside the perpetrator is a victim that's crying out for help and didn't get it and is acting out their pain. And as a society, like a family, can we help people rather than stigmatize them?
Absolutely. And I think that also when you're talking about, you know, great psychotherapy, the resources are not there for everyone to have great psychotherapy. And even the resources that are available, people don't know about them. So I went through a situation in 2008 where I knew someone that was having suicidal ideation, but did not have insurance. And so, you know, like emergency rooms can't turn you away. So like we went to the emergency room and they were hospitalized for a week, and the hospital then helped set them up with all of the resources that were there that we didn't even know about for free mental health treatments, for, you know, $2 medications and things like that. And we never would have known that those things were there if it had not been a trip to the emergency room that then gave us those resources. And I think that that's the struggle, is that, you know, one, you can find a therapist. And I've worked at companies where they have this service where you can do, you know, free therapy calls, but it's like through whatever system. And, you know, it took me 20 years to find the right therapist. This is like the most intimate relationship you'll ever have in your life.
Right.
So, you know, good psychotherapy, it's not necessarily that you've got like, I mean, I'm sure there are really terrible therapists, but really you have to find the right relationship. And if you're tied to what Blue Cross will cover or what Cigna will cover, then how do you do that? Or if it was only when COVID started that telehealth was covered under insurance. Right. So like, what do you do then? So, and if I had wanted to do telehealth before COVID, instead of my insurance covering it, it would have cost me $250 an appointment, and I would not have been able to work with the amazing person that it took me 20 years to find.
Right.
So it is, it's very much a systems issue on how do people get great psychotherapy? How do they know? And how do they know that they can go in and they can actually work on things where it's not like, okay, I'm coming back and I've got post-traumatic stress because this really bad thing just happened. But these things that also from their childhood, you know, I talk about my journey of mental health starting in 2007 with the loss of my brother. But the PTSD I suffer and the insomnia I suffer is from childhood abuse so I didn't even start the mental health journey until I lost my brother. But then there's all of these other things that,
right.
you know, obviously, like we grew up in this household with all of these things going on, which fed into his mental health issues, and then also created all these issues for me that I did not explore until I was in there going through my grief over my brother. So it's really just knowing that, you know, there is that trauma, and how do you keep that abuse from turning into being the abuser and then ending up in prison with all of these other people that have been subject to abuse. Their love maps are screwed up. They don't know how to interact. All of these things.
Absolutely.
And then they've abused people, and it's just this constant. And then where do those people end up?
Right.
It's a major system issue.
Absolutely. I think we're looking at something that is, you know, were we to be informed enough and in enough pain to be motivated enough and to recognize our pain and not keep projecting it onto other people, that we're really looking at the need for a huge paradigm shift. And the shift is healing. And the shift is, you know, having healing our human relations be number one priority for ourselves and for our country, so that our resources are funneled into mental health, so that those resources, because you're right, there are so many people who will never get the help that they need and deserve. And at the same time, it needs to be a national agenda, because it's our created national environment that's creating some of these problems, whether it's racial discrimination or religious discrimination or targeting immigrants or the wealth divide between the 1% and the 99%. You know, there are so many systemic Family of America issues that need to be addressed to create an environment that can actually support our families being healthy.
Right.
So it goes both ways. We need the bottom up. We need to support in any way we can families getting help if they're in trouble. And that is without the hope with in any case possible. In some cases, it's not possible. There are people we don't know how to treat, and they do need to be restrained. And that's sad that it's gotten to that point. But short of that, I think the paradigm shift is, how can we help you heal and come back together and reconnect and create safety and reignite the bonds between you that were either non-existent or broken or damaged? And that is a huge paradigm shift, because for one thing, it takes power away from abusive individuals and institutions, and it changes the whole economic structure of our country. And these are things that I think as a country we have to face if we want to survive as a race, as a species, because everything I'm talking about really applies to the globe. I'm just talking about America because I live in America and I'm familiar with America, but I think some of these principles are applied to people all over the world.
Yeah, I talk about things as they relate to America, because I don't know exactly how other countries are. And I know that there are definitely issues in other countries, and then there are fixes in other countries with the education system. So, you know, there are always things that are worse and things that are better in different places. But, you know, when you were talking about that, I always think about all of these things I think kids should learn in school that they don't. We took away trade classes and exchanged that for AP courses, because everyone needs to go to college and get all of the student loan debt. I remember sex ed classes and health classes and the very limited information that was provided. And I am sure now some schools have a much better, you know, they're allowed to say more. When I was in school, it was abstinence and all of these things were definitely the way it was educated. But then where is the mental health part of health? I do know that there are organizations like the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention that have created programs like More Than Sad and things like that, that can be put into the school systems where people can recognize suicidal ideation, but really just mental health as a whole. You know, yeah. We've got health class where we're learning about diseases and how to do CPR and apply pressure. But, you know, recently I've taken through John Hopkins, a psychological first aid course. And everyone's like, well, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, just like how there's a, you know, a poster up for doing the Heimlich maneuver, if there's a crisis, you know, the paramedics can't do everything. The therapists can't do everything. So being trained to hop in and understand those crisis steps right there, I think is very beneficial. So like I've recently taken that course and I think it's a very valuable tool, but where are those tools for people when they're growing up? Because by the time they become an adult, then, and they're not seeking help, mental health, they don't even know they need to seek mental health treatment.
Exactly.
So exactly. This is definitely a systems issue. I think the whole school system that is set up now, that's really just high school is training you for college, not for life. And I think that that's a struggle. And once again, it's a financial issue. We're getting budget cuts. We're having teachers on a massive level quit because they're mistreated, they're not paid well, and it's dangerous to be a teacher because we're not putting the money into the schools, we're taking it away.
Exactly. I mean, that's it. So part of that paradigm shift is where we put our tax money. And for me, it's into healing. It's into having psychology be a main course in high school. That's just part of the curriculum. Learning about psychology, learning about family dynamics, learning about projection, and you know how to, you know, all the things that we're talking about. How to see yourself as a functional part of a whole rather than the focus being on individualism and the, you know, your own personal success or competitive value rather than your safety, your well-being, and your ability to thrive actually depend on a functioning whole system that's inclusive and loving and safe and providing for you and teaches you good boundaries and teach our children, you know, nonviolent conflict resolution. Wouldn't that be amazing to have that just be a part of our school curriculum? Because that's the training for life. Right. The training for life is the training for relationship. Everything depends on relationship pretty much, unless you're, you know, a hermit who can make money just doing your art in your cave, but that's not most people's life, right?
Right.
And so I'd like to see that in our government. I'd like to see, and again, it's part of the paradigm shift and it's part of the shift in our national agenda and where we put our resources. Let's have mediators in Congress. Let's show people how to come together and resolve their differences for the good of the country rather than the good of the perceived good of themselves or their party or whatever. Just like we do in families. That's what family therapy is about. How do we come together and communicate for our common good?
Yeah.
So that does that make sense? Yeah,
it does. But it's how do we get there? How do we make it be about mental health initiatives instead of political initiatives? Because you know, you're always hearing this mental health bill is up, or this healthcare bill is up, or this, you know, all of these different things are up to talk about, but it is very political. It's like, hey, this is what we're wanting to get passed, but this is what it's going to cost. And we're also throwing in 20 other things. So even if you do want this main change, but you don't want the other one, then you're not going to vote for it. And then I also feel like a lot of people, they focus on presidential elections and don't really see the steps that lead to that through this smaller community and these smaller votes and things. Because honestly, I think a lot of people don't even know that they're happening. I've had that happen where I'll drive through downtown and there'll be like vote here signs. And I'm like, what vote? And I have to look it up. And I'm like, if I didn't drive through, you know, the little downtown strip, like I would have never known there was a vote. Never.
Well, you know, I think one of the elements that's really basic to what you're talking about is education. And that's actually why I'm writing this book, because I think a lot of people, if you don't have exposure to psychology and you've never been to therapy and you just don't have that as in your environment, your family, you know, languaging and your community, then I think a lot of people don't know psychologically how we're behaving and why we behave the way we do and what underlies healthy psychological functioning and what underlies dysfunctional and abusive or violent psychological functioning. So I think education is the place to begin. And because an informed public is going to make different choices, right? And again, I want to repeat what I said in the beginning. We are being conditioned to believe that so much of what the division and strife is about are political ideological differences, but they're mental health issues. Mentally healthy people don't make war on other people. They don't rape. They don't exploit. They don't kill. They don't target vulnerable populations. Mentally healthy people operate on the basis of caring and inclusiveness and sharing and cooperation and healthy boundaries and peaceful conflict resolution. And this we see over and over again in the field of psychology and in our offices. And this is the paradigm shift. It's huge. And it's like, to me, it's like the secret lying hidden in plain sight.
Exactly. I almost feel like where you're going to have people that will binge watch the Netflix series and things like that, but not actually go look at the mental health podcast and those things. So can we make Hollywood change? I have been very obsessed lately on the fact that the TV MA rating has now started to include sexual violence because it is so common in TV. And I'm like, why does this have to be? And I've had some people tell me that, well, it's that we're finally showing people that this is this is happening and this trauma is happening. And I'm like, but every other episode doesn't need to be that. We don't need to believe that if there was a zombie apocalypse tomorrow, that every woman is a potential victim for rape, because that's what happens when the zombie apocalypse happens. And so, and it's very much like we realize that, romanticizing suicide is not okay. So there, years ago, Netflix came out with 13 Reasons Why. They actually went in and adjusted it because the different suicide organizations went to them. They put a lot of messaging in it at the beginning and the end. And, there were things published called 13 Reasons Why Not and things like that. So I'm not saying that it's not still romanticized, but I don't see anyone kind of speaking out about why is the rape culture so heavily ingrained in our TV shows and our media? Like it's constant. Like, why is this a warning? That's not, it used to be like nudity and things like that, and now sexual violence. And I'm just like, why is this there? Why do we have that? Why do we have to warn people that this is in every episode of something?
Right. And I think it's the sensationalizing of the things that, again, no one really wants in their life. So somehow it's sensationalizing for entertainment, which I agree with you is unhealthy. And it's also distancing. And I want to go back to something that you said for the same reason when you were talking about, that mental health, bills come up and maybe they pass and maybe they don't. And I think part of that whole thing is that we still, I think, as a culture, make mental health belong to other people. There's other people who are mentally ill. And so, how are we going to take care of that mentally ill population? Maybe we just don't want to put the money there because we want to put it somewhere else. But our society is suffering from mental health problems. We're all suffering. You cannot be in an abusive family, a one-on-one abusive family, even if you are not the target of the abuse, you are still being abused by witnessing it. And we are all being abused by witnessing the abuses that happen in this country. And we have to know that.
And then we all have guilt and shame. And that's a trauma that comes on us. Because if you are the child or the person in the home that's not being abused, but's witnessing it, there's guilt, there's shame, and the person being abused also feels those things. So it's definitely, I can see how as a nation, I mean, I definitely feel that way. I feel guilty that I can't make everything better. So it's definitely, and I know that I'm one of those people that sees that mental health does affect everyone, but that's because I've been educated and involved in it. So that's, you know, when you're a therapist or an advocate and you're in these things, you know about them more. Just like if I was an advocate, you know, against the death penalty, I would know a lot more about those things. So my brain would shift on that. So I mean, we talked about a lot here, and we talked about, you know, America in therapy. And really that's, you know, your book, that's going to be your book, but that's really been this whole topic of conversation. Did we miss anything that you really want to make sure the audience hears? And then, you know, keeping in mind that when your book releases, I definitely want to have you back and we can really touch more on that as well. Yeah.
No, I would love to. You know, something was in my mind and it just escaped me. So I think we've said a lot and we'll just save the rest for the next time we meet. And I would love to come back when my book is out. And I really appreciate this conversation because it's really fun to talk to somebody who's also super knowledgeable with what I'm talking about. So I've really enjoyed talking with you and I really appreciate being here.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you being here too. I think this entire journey for this podcast has just shown me that so many people are, you know, have things to say about mental health and know where to really say it. And I think that that's just a really, you know, social media and stuff has created ways for us to be traumatized, but there's also this little good point that we're getting out of it. So that makes me happy.
Totally. And if I can, I'd like to just share that I have a website and it's www.phyllislevitt.com. And for anyone who's interested, you can sign up on my homepage to receive a notification for when my book comes out. And I would love to, you know, stay in touch with people. And then I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all those good things. So please follow me. And
absolutely. And we will have all of those links on the AllisonInWonderland.com website. And if you were watching this on YouTube, then that website just popped up under Phyllis. So you will see it there as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.